This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
And our campaign 2020 coverage continues on day one of the Democratic National Convention, the first national convention ever held virtually. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll get the perspective of former Republican Congressman Tom Davis and Lavora Barnes. She is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. A reminder, tomorrow evening, the coverage will begin at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And among the speakers, former President Bill Clinton, what they're calling the roll call across America, the roll call of states. Also, a very brief speech by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and we'll hear from Dr. Jill Biden, the wife of the former vice president and the presumptive Democratic nominee. Alexi McCammon is joining us from Wilmington, Delaware. She's been following the proceedings all night. So first, your takeaway. What's the story from this evening?
Well, thank you for having me back, Steve. The story from tonight's evening, the first night of the Democratic Convention, is former First Lady Michelle Obama's closing speech. That really stole the night. And I think that's what's going to be not only leading the conversation heading into day two, but I think it set a high bar that all the other major speeches to happen throughout the week, including that of Joe Biden's himself, will be compared to Michelle Obama's speech. She didn't make these kind of, you know, low blow personal attacks against President Trump. She was very clinical in her analysis of him and his job as president thus far. And she even used a line from the president himself in his interview with Axios on HBO when he sort of dismissed the number of deaths, the human toll caused by the coronavirus pandemic. He told my colleague Jonathan Swan, quote, "It is what it is." Tonight, we heard Michelle Obama using those same words against the president, saying that he is simply not fit to be president and it is what it is.
And of course, this had a very different feel for those who have been used to watching conventions. No crowd. There won't be a balloon drop on Thursday. So how do you think it sold to those watching at home, in particular, those who may be on the fence?
You know, I heard mixed reviews from folks really on both sides of the aisle, which I guess suggests that some Republicans were tuning into this convention. And I think that is not in small part because of the role of, you know, former Governor John Kasich and other high-profile Republicans who joined the convention in different ways to make their case for Biden and against President Trump. But, of course, to your point, it is totally new and different for us to experience a convention totally virtually in this way. We saw how Democrats really tried to put a lot of production value behind that, interspersing, you know, musical performances from big artists, different types of videos. They had the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning with a kind of virtual choir. So it seems that they're doing everything they can to make it as engaging as possible. I would imagine that the viewership dips off a little bit tomorrow just because the opening night is so novel to a lot of people. But I would also imagine then, as Senator Harris makes her remarks on Wednesday and Joe Biden, of course, accepts the nomination on Thursday, a lot of folks will be tuning in because it's their only chance to really hear from the nominees in that intimate of a setting and in that intimate of a way on this week.
And as you know, COVID-19 loomed large throughout the evening. Philanese Floyd is the brother of George Floyd, and in the 9 o'clock hour, he talked about the death of his brother and the movement that ensued. Let's watch.
My brother George was selfless. He always made sacrifices for his family, friends, and even complete strangers. George had a giving spirit, a spirit that has shown up on streets around our nation and around the world. People of all races, all ages, all genders, all backgrounds, peacefully protesting in the name of love and unity. It's a fitting legacy for our brother, but George should be alive today. Breonna Taylor should be alive today. Ahmaud Arbery should be alive today. Eric Garner should be alive today. Stephon Clark, or Tatiana Jefferson, Sandra Bland, they should all be alive today. So it's up to us to carry on the fight for justice.
The brother of George Floyd, but Alexi McCammon, has this become a wedge issue between Democrats and Republicans when we saw the marches and also the impact it's had on police forces around the country?
When you look at polling, and, you know, I know that we're all focused on polling in different ways, especially as we're getting close to the election. But when you look at polling, Steve, you see that one of Vice President Biden's biggest margins of victory against President Trump comes when voters are ranking them on how they would handle race relations. Biden has a 24-point lead on Trump on how he would handle race relations compared to the incumbent president. And that, I think, explains a little bit of the national boost that you're seeing Biden have against President Trump in a head-to-head matchup, leading by 9 to 10 points nationally in many different polls we've seen recently. So this is definitely becoming a wedge issue, but it's becoming an issue that, you know, the Democratic Party is becoming defined by, you know, no, and that's because in part that they are really putting this front and center. I mean, in the first 30 minutes of the opening night of the convention, not only did you have George Floyd's family speaking, as you just played, Steve, but we had D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser speaking above Black Lives Matter Plaza, a place that she said she had painted on the street so that it could represent a place where everyone stands together and says, enough, we've had enough of the racial injustice experience in this country. And I think that was a really powerful moment because it's sending a very clear signal for the Democratic Party to voters that they are prioritizing racial injustice and rooting out systemic racism and addressing police brutality as much as they care about addressing and prioritize addressing the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic crisis that we're in. So they're really showing that they can talk about all three of these major issues, whereas from the president, we normally hear him talking about the economic crisis and not so much the pandemic and police brutality.
And as you know, the president today in Minnesota and in Wisconsin, and at times questioning the mental acuity of the former vice president. How does the Biden campaign respond to that ongoing drumbeat from the president that Joe Biden is not up to the job?
Well, quite frankly, the Biden campaign finds that line of attack and questioning ridiculous, and they almost don't want to engage with it. They have engaged with it to a level that they feel comfortable with. There was a press conference a couple of weeks ago where Biden said something to the effect of, you know, President Trump not having the cognitive understanding of his daily briefings. But the Biden campaign doesn't want to be dragged off course by these baseless attacks from the president, or what they view as baseless attacks from the president. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't have to continue answering these things. And of course, when the general election debates start, that is definitely something that the president will lob against his opponent. But the Biden campaign maintains that they think that it is a ridiculous line of attack. And because they label it ridiculous, they think engaging with it will only delegitimize their position on this.
And of course, you are in a hotel room in Wilmington, Delaware. We're here in Washington, D.C. We're not Milwaukee, Wisconsin tonight. What's the rest of the week going to look like for you as a reporter covering this story?
Well, Steve, I'm really excited for Wednesday and Thursday of this week, because that's when Senator Harris and Joe Biden will actually be giving their remarks live in person from the Chase Center here in downtown Wilmington, Delaware. So I'll actually be in the room with them, Harris on Wednesday, Biden on Thursday, as they're giving those remarks. I imagine, based on some of the other socially distanced COVID-era campaign events I've been to for Biden so far, that it will just be Harris and Biden, you know, on their own on Wednesday and Thursday, and then a group of us reporters. And I would imagine it won't be more than maybe 20 of us who are in the room. We all are sitting 6 feet apart, but it's one of the only lasting traditions that we have of the campaign trail, having these in-person events. So it'll be really interesting to see the energy inside of the room, how they both deliver remarks in spite of not having a live audience in front of them, but a group of reporters who are, of course, is dying to ask them questions when they finish. But I think it'll be a really fascinating thing to see in person. And then, of course, we'll get a chance to talk to them in real time right after they're done. And I think that will be really illuminating.
Alexi McCammon, and her work available at Axios.com. We will check in with you again tomorrow night. Thanks for being part of C-SPAN's coverage.
Thank you, Steve.
In just a moment, we'll talk to Lavora Barnes. She is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. But let's first turn to Tom Davis, former Republican congressman from Northern Virginia, former head of the Republican Congressional Committee. I want to begin with your former colleague, John Kasich. His speech tonight, was it effective?
Well, I think we'll see. He didn't move many Democrats. There's a lot of Democratic criticism of what John was saying, that he gets more time in the spotlight than AOC and the like. But I think from the Biden campaign perspective, what they're trying to say is, don't be afraid of Joe Biden and coming over to us. We've got people like John Kasich. What I think you have to understand, though, is the Republican base has moved over the last decade and a half. It's migrated from the country club to the country. It's become a more rural party. and the party that John Kasich and certainly the party of Meg Whitman, former governor of New Jersey, they came in. It's a different party, as is the Democratic Party, a different party. About half of the counties that Ronald Reagan lost in 1984, when he got 60% of the vote nationally, were carried by Donald Trump. These are former Democrats. Places like Elliott County, Kentucky, never before carried by a Republican candidate, Donald Trump got 70%. So the parties are migrating, and what you see among many Republicans, they don't identify with the new coalition that made up the Trump coalition. I think John Kasich speaks for those people.
And Congressman Davis, we also heard from Senator Bernie Sanders, who said he can work with progressives and with conservatives. What was his message tonight?
I think what he's trying to is he's part of a Democratic coalition now that is united around one thing, and that is beating Donald Trump. I think their problems come in after they win, and they have this coalition of basically people who don't like Donald Trump for different reasons, and they have to govern and start making choices between their conservatives and their more moderate voters in the suburbs, their inner city groups and the like, and they start clashing. But right now, being an out party, their job is to basically say, we need a change and give us a chance to govern. Their real test will come later if they can hold that together.
Let's turn to Lavora Barnes. She is joining us from Detroit, the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. How does it feel to be home and not in Milwaukee tonight?
Well, it's not what we expected, but I certainly enjoyed enjoying the convention safely from my home and not having to worry about any public health issues. So I'm glad to have been able to be at home to watch it.
Kristen Yerkeza is one of the people who spoke earlier tonight. Her dad, a Donald Trump supporter, he succumbed earlier this year to COVID-19. Let's watch that moment. I want to get your reaction afterwards.
My dad was a healthy 65-year-old. His only pre-existing condition was trusting Donald Trump, and for that, he paid with his life. I am not alone. Once I told my story, a lot of people reached out to me to share theirs. They asked me to help them keep their communities safe, especially communities of color, which have been disproportionately affected. They asked me, a normal person, to help, because Donald Trump won't.
From tonight's DNC convention, Lavora Barnes, on a personal level and a political level, was that effective?
I was so moved by what Kristen had to say there. And in the moment when she said his only pre-existing condition was trusting Donald Trump, I actually gasped when I heard her say it. It's so powerful. And she's so brave to come forward and have that conversation in a national stage. And I know she did it because folks asked her to step up and speak up, and because she was so angry and hurt by the way this president has not responded to COVID, and probably believes that her father did not have to contract COVID and pass away if we'd had a better response to this horrible pandemic earlier from this administration. Perhaps this response, more like Democratic governors like Governor Whitmer had here in Michigan, might have saved some more lives.
Tom Davis, is coronavirus the single biggest issue between now and the election for President Trump?
Well, it is today. Whether it will be in October, I think, remains to be seen at this point. You know, I just call viewers' attention to the fact that a number of governors made decisions moving seniors into nursing homes where you had higher death rates and the like. A lot of mistakes were made early on, not just at the national level, but in state levels. In Michigan, you had basically riots in the state capitol over some of the governor's actions there. I'm not sure that any leader makes popular decisions at a time of a pandemic like this. Whichever way you go, you're going to alienate somebody, either closing down the economy, the deaths and the illness that ensue. These are difficult leaders, and we've had Republicans and Democrats come under criticism in different jurisdictions. But look, President Trump is the president of the United States, and all is fair in a political campaign at this point. And I think the Democrats tried to maximize that tonight.
Lavora Barnes, as you know, some recent polling has the Biden campaign up 10, 12 points in Michigan. But what's your biggest concern as you look at those poll numbers and what you heard tonight at this convention?
We're going to ignore those poll numbers and continue to work hard here in Michigan to garner every vote we can as we move toward Election Day and all the way through Election Day. I am worried, however, about the Postal Service. I am worried about whether or not our voters will be able to get their ballots once they're mailed from the clerks and then get those ballots back to those clerks. We're going to be encouraging our voters here in Michigan to request those ballots right away, get them in their hands early, get them voted and return them to the clerks. And folks who can, to return those to the clerks in person rather than putting a heavier burden on our postal service, our defunded currently postal service. We need to make sure folks get these votes in and so they can get counted. So we're working hard to make sure that happens. Very concerned about what's happening with the postal service right now.
And of course, that came up during the convention tonight. I want to come back to that in just a moment. But first, John Kasich, former Ohio governor, 2016 Republican presidential candidate, giving one of the speeches in the 10 o'clock hour, which was carried by the broadcast networks as well. Here's a portion.
America is at a crossroads. Sometimes elections represent a real choice, a choice we make as individuals and as a nation about which path we want to take when we've come to challenging times. America is at that crossroads today. The stakes in this election are greater than any in modern times. Many of us have been deeply concerned about the current path we've been following for the past 4 years. It's a path that's led to division, dysfunction, irresponsibility, and growing vitriol between our citizens. Continuing to follow that path will have terrible consequences for America's soul because we're being taken down the wrong road by a president who is pitted one against the other. He's unlike all of our best leaders before him who work to unite us, to bridge our differences, and lead us to a united America. I'm a lifelong Republican. But that attachment holds second place to my responsibility to my country. That's why I've chosen to appear at this convention.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Tom Davis, again, you know John Kasich. Will he face repercussions in the Republican Party?
Well, I think he already has when you look at the polling in Ohio. I just say I'm a big fan of John Kasich's. We served together. He's a very principled guy. He's gone in a different direction here than I think the Republican Party that has been moving. Basically from the party John Kasich and I grew up in, it's moved out to a more rural party at this point. And I think some Republicans are uncomfortable, but it's the trade-off you get of many people who, I noted before, have been voting Democratic for years, that voted for President Trump last time in some of these rural areas that he swept. That's why he carried Wisconsin, almost carried Minnesota, carried Western Pennsylvania to help him carry that state. So coalitions are changing. And as those coalitions change, people that grew up in one party see it moving away from them. So I think that's what we saw. Let me just make a comment on the Postal Service. I heard a comment about the underfunded Postal Service. The Postal Service has, since 1972, has had to operate on its own without federal subsidy. Many of us went to the Obama administration and said the Postal Service is in trouble. The business model that they grew up with is gone because you have now emails, you have faxes, you have competition from UPS and FedEx and other groups, and it needs reform. And you've just seen an inability when you had a Democratic Congress, when you had a Republican Congress, they've stayed away from it because it's unpopular. Only now in election year are they raising this. And these letters that went out to the states, these letters were approved by the attorney for the Post Office Department, the General Counsel, prior to the new Postmaster General coming in. Now, he'll answer some questions before Congress next week, as he should. But I think it speaks more to the Postal Service as needed a bailout or some reform for some time if it's going to remain financially viable. And to try to pin this on the administration when you have a Democratic House, a Senate, where you need 60 votes to make reforms, I think that's an overreach, but it's a good political issue.
Lavora Barnes, as you know, the House is coming back this Saturday. We'll have it live here on C-SPAN. And as Tom Davis mentioned, it came up in the convention tonight, the hearing that will take place next week. But Republicans say that this is a conspiracy theory.
It's one thing to talk about reforming the post office. It's another thing to begin to strip away the important mechanisms that allow the postal workers to do their work, to refuse to pay them for overtime, to take away the machinery they need, to start packing up the post boxes around the country that people need to drop their ballots in right now, just before an election, at a time when the President of the United States is telling folks that voting by mail, or perhaps absentee voting, or both, which are the same, are somehow fraudulent ways to vote. I think that the timing of this indicates it is indeed a political issue right now, and that the people of the country have noticed this. They have not, it has not gone unnoticed. These people understand what's happening right now and have risen up loudly to say, you're not going to take apart my post office, and I'm going to find another way to make sure my ballot gets counted if you try to.
But former Congressman Davis, you put part of the blame on the Obama-Biden administration.
Well, I think this goes back. I'm not trying to blame anybody. I'm trying to explain this didn't start or end with Donald Trump. Under the Obama administration, 5,000 letterboxes were removed where people could drop letters. This has been routine. It happened before Obama. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just trying to say this is a broadened problem that has now landed at the doorstep of the administration. They're trying to put all the blame there, where this is a systematic problem that pre-exists this, that previous administrations failed to touch. And that is the need for the post office to get a different business model. And many of these changes couldn't go in because Democrats didn't want the changes, because some of their allies, some Republicans. But it's been a bipartisan problem that's been neglected. It's a good issue for Democrats. I don't blame them for bringing it up, but I think we ought to stick to the facts.
Another moment from the convention tonight. And Tom Davis, I want to get your reaction when Governor Kasich said that Joe Biden won't move to the left, maybe more of a mainstream president if elected. Here's more from his speech.
We can all see what's going on in our country today and all the questions that are facing us. And no one person or party has all the answers. But what we do know is that we can do better than what we've been seeing today, for sure. And I know that Joe Biden, with his experience and his wisdom and his decency, can bring us together to help us find that better way. I'm sure there are Republicans and independents who couldn't imagine crossing over to support a Democrat. They fear Joe may turn sharp left and leave them behind. I don't believe that, because I know the measure of the man. It's reasonable, faithful, respectful. And you know, no one pushes Joe around.
So, Tom Davis, on the same night that we had Senator Bernie Sanders talking about his progressive agenda, you had Governor Kasich saying that he won't be moved to the left.
Yeah, exactly. Look, right now, this is a coalition, basically, of people who want a who don't like Donald Trump, and they need to hold that together, because these groups will fight with each other should they be successful in winning the presidency. And so they're all putting different spins on it. As to the cognizance of the former vice president, I would agree, he's a very decent man. I served in the House when he was in the Senate, and I won't say anything. There's nothing wrong with him. He's a very decent man. The only person that can solve the cognizance problem is him, as he's out on the campaign trail. How does he do in his speeches? How many press conferences does he do? He's the only one that can put that to rest. And I think that issue is going to continue to be something the Republicans use against him as we move on. As to whether he moves left or not, he picked Kamala Harris, who is, I guess, has the second most liberal voting record in the U.S. Senate, as his running mate. That should be some indication of where he wants to go at this point. I think the Democratic Party is gradually moving left. I think we see that in primaries. Republican Party moving right. We are seeing a disappearance of the center at this point. But look, time will tell. And I think from John Kasich's point of view, he wants to see the best in Biden, that he stays centered. And Sanders sees it a different way, and time will tell. But the indications I have is that Vice President Biden is on a coalition that is steadily moving left, and we're seeing that in primaries across the country.
I want to get to that point in just a moment, but quick follow-up, Tom Davis. Will he move the needle among those Republicans who are uncertain about Donald Trump but still have questions about Joe Biden?
Well, I think he certainly asks the right questions for those people, but I think the campaigns matter. And I think the campaigns will begin after these conventions. These 2 weeks are kind of the kickoff point for this. And I think what comes out in the campaigns on these issues, I think, is going to make a difference. Let me just say one other thing about the tragic murder of George Floyd. There's no question that's a tragedy. I think Republicans and Democrats, as a nation, we've united and protested against that. One of the shortcomings, though, if I will, the Achilles heel for Democrats is their failure to denounce the people that have taken that and have hijacked that and gone into some of these cities and moved it into a destructive mode that really have nothing to do with that. And their failure to denounce that group while at the same time voicing support for the demonstrators is, I think, an Achilles heel that they face in the fall.
Lavora Barnes, is there a schism between more mainstream Democrats and the progressives, who many say is really driving the energy in the Democratic Party? What are you seeing?
You know, we've always been a big tent party. We've always brought people under our tent from both ends of that Democratic spectrum. What we have in Joe Biden is someone who knows how to bridge that gap, someone who will unify us as a party, and also someone who can work across the aisle. He's done it before. He'll do it again as president of the United States. And just to talk a little bit about Black Lives Matter, I'm so proud of our convention tonight because we did rise to the moment and speak to the Black Lives Matter movement, talk about the violence being perpetrated against Black and brown people. And also, I was so honored to see George Floyd's family members get a chance to participate. And I think that this speaks loudly to the fact that this party understands where we are in this moment. This president, soon to be president, Joe Biden, understands where we are in this moment. He's chosen a vice presidential candidate who will be a partner for him in leading this nation forward. I'm so excited and so thrilled to have the two of them leading us forward now. And this convention, I think, is a great kickoff for them in their campaign going forward.
There are two other moments I want to get your reaction to. First, Lavora Barnes, from Senator Bernie Sanders, who ran in 2016. He had some problems, of course, with the Hillary Clinton campaign. Seems to be embracing Joe Biden in 2020, and told the delegates and the country this tonight.
Many of the ideas we fought for that just a few years ago were considered radical are now mainstream. But let us be clear. If Donald Trump is reelected, all the progress we have made will be in jeopardy. At its most basic, this election is about preserving our democracy. During this president's term, the unthinkable has become normal. He has tried to prevent people from voting, undermined the U.S. Postal Service, deployed the military and federal agents against peaceful protesters, threatened to delay the election, and suggested that he will not leave office if he loses.
And that from Senator Bernie Sanders. So, Lavora Barnes, his message to his supporters, will they vote for Joe Biden?
I so appreciated Senator Sanders' words of unity tonight. I do think that his supporters understand this election is indeed, I know people say it every cycle, but this is indeed the election of a lifetime. And they understand the importance of uniting along with Senator Sanders behind the Biden-Harris ticket. And they will. They'll be there. We'll vote as Democrats and make sure we get this election taken care of and make sure we get Joe Biden elected president of the United States.
Tom Davis, were the Democrats successful in their theme tonight?
Well, I think they played, I think they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish in terms of the messaging. It was tightly controlled. I think what I want to see is how many people actually watch this in this new format without the excitement and the balloons and the funny hats and the things that go with the convention. You know, what's the public reaction going to be to that? I think that remains to be seen. Vice President Biden's speech on Thursday night, I think, is going to be pivotal in terms of this is his opportunity for the nation will be watching him and seeing that he can lay some of these other rumors to rest, or he can, light a fire under them, just depending how he reacts. And so the campaigns really matter. He is on an average about 7 points ahead of President Trump. That is where Bush was 7 points down at this point to Dukakis. If you go back to 88, another regime. So I agree with our friend from Michigan that this race is not over at this point. It's got a long way to go, and campaigns matter at this point. And the point of the convention tonight was to try to unify the Democratic Party. I think it was pretty tightly scripted, and the question's going to be, I think we'll know more tomorrow from the reaction, how many people actually watch this.
And we learned, Tom Davis, that the president will be delivering his speech from the White House, and the Trump campaign requesting for fireworks next to the Washington Monument on Thursday evening, a week from Thursday.
Well, it's not balloons, but it's fireworks. See how it plays.
We talked to Lexi McCammon from Axios. She said that one of the headlines tonight was the speech by former First Lady Michelle Obama. Former President Obama, by the way, will be speaking on Wednesday evening. Here's part of what she said tonight.
We know that what's going on in this country is just not right. This is not who we want to be. So what do we do now? What's our strategy? Over the past 4 years, a lot of people have asked me, when others are going so low, does going high still really work? My answer, going high is the only thing that works. Because when we go low, when we use those same tactics of degrading and dehumanizing others, we just become part of the ugly noise that's drowning out everything else. We degrade ourselves. We degrade the very causes for which we fight. But let's be clear. Going high does not mean putting on a smile and saying nice things when confronted by viciousness and cruelty. Going high means taking the harder path. It means scraping and clawing our way to that mountaintop.
Lavora Barnes, it really seemed to be a continuation of the speech she gave 4 years ago in Philadelphia.
So I was so moved by Michelle Obama's passion, her kindness, her care for this country and her people. I actually wrote a note during the speech that just to remind myself, going high means staying fierce against hatred. I really appreciate her sort of rework of that theme that she taught us all about how important it is for us to go high while others go low. Her speech tonight was a highlight for me. So well delivered, so beautifully written. I do think that others coming and it's subsequent nights have a high bar in what Michelle Obama did tonight. She was magnificent.
Tom Davis, your reaction to the former First Lady?
She's the most popular figure in the Democratic Party, if you know, just by polling numbers at this point, beloved within and within that Democratic coalition. She gave, I think, an excellent speech and accomplished what she was needed to do, and that's try to uniting Democrats. It is a high bar for the future evenings, but I think the highlight of this is going to be Joe Biden's speech on Thursday evening. This will be his first real shot for the American public where they get to see him for an extended period of time. And then the campaign afterwards, where you have the tough questions and the debates. There's still a long way to go in this.
Tom Davis, your first national convention, when was it?
1972.
What was it like?
It was in Miami. It was just a lot of balloons, and it was very, very, very exciting. It was with Nixon, as you know. He went on to carry 49 states that year, but it was an exciting convention. It was Miami, so it was a big party, and I've been a delegate to, I think, like five of them since then.
Does tonight change party conventions? Do you think 4 years from now we're back to the balloons and the convention halls and the funny hats?
I do. I think so. Nothing against what the Democrats put on tonight, because I think they did the best with what's available, and the Republicans are going to have the same thing. But I don't think anything beats the excitement, even over television, of having people cheering. You just contrast that with the State of the Union that a president gives and the rebuttal speech, which is always a little bit more subdued and doesn't have the same lighting and energy. So I think they'll go back because I think you get a bigger energy factor in that hall, and delegates like going. That's one of the things that the worker bees, if you will, the delegates like, is being able to go to a convention and party and get to see others like them.
And Lavora Barnes, you're talking to the National Democratic Party. Tomorrow will be the roll call across America, the roll call of states. Can you explain how that's going to work for you, for Michigan, and for the other states?
Well, that's a secret that I'm not going to tell you, but just know that the convention planners have figured out a terrific way to get that roll call done from all of the states and the territories, and it's going to be great. You know, my first convention was Barack Obama's 2008 convention, and there is nothing like that feeling of being in the room, in the space, getting the excitement. But I have to say, the folks who put together this convention came as close to delivering that as you could, given that that we had to do this virtually. I do think we all miss the ball, the balloon drop and the noise and the excitement and getting to meet folks from all over the country in the convention space. But we're finding ways to do it virtually. And I'm really pleased with the way tonight went. And I think if this is how they pulled it off the first night, it's going to be a great week for the Democrats.
I guess that's what they would call a tease. You're not going to tell us.
I am not. No.
Well, we'll check in with you tomorrow night. Lavora Barnes is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, joining us from Detroit via Zoom. Thanks very much for being with us. And former Republican Congressman Tom Davis here in Washington, who's also back with us tomorrow evening. We thank you for being with us.
Thanks.
And a reminder, C-SPAN's Washington Journal tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 4 o'clock for those of you on the West Coast. The guests will include Jennifer Epstein from Bloomberg News, also Amy Allison of She the People, and Bradley Baitchek, who's with American Bridge 21st Century. That's tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 4 o'clock for those of you on the West Coast. All of our coverage available on the web at cspan.org.